love to meet you afterwards, actually. But this is Austin and Kaylee, and they, if you don't know, most of you are aware, but if you don't know, in 2 weeks from today, we are starting a Sunday morning gathering in Hillsboro for our communities out there, and Austin and Kaylee will be the out there weekly leading worship there. And you'll see them here from time to time because we're selfish. So they'll be in and out of here as well. But they are actually currently living on the east side of Portland and just taking a step of faith to move out and find jobs and be a part of what we're doing out there, or what God's doing out there, what we're trying to join in with there. So if you're from Hillsboro area and going to be going there in 2 weeks, you're part of that community, surely get to know them. They'll be around. And then if not, still be nice and say hi. They're pretty cool. So we're excited about them. Thanks, guys. Yeah, we're excited about that. The space is almost done, and communities are excited. We're starting to roll. Super, super excited about that. So please be praying for that as we go forward. Today, we are back in Hebrews chapter 10. And if those of you that have been with us the last few weeks, you know that we've been kind of unfolding the practicalities of just a few verses. In chapter 10, verses 23 through 25 in the book of Hebrews, we were trying to just actually just take some time to really think through and process what would it look like for us to implement this idea, or to continue implementing this idea. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23 says this: "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." So the confession, the author of Hebrews saying, hold fast, like hold on to, grip it tight, this idea, this confession. The book of Hebrews, the confession is super simple. All it is we're confessing that Jesus is better than anything you can imagine or think of, any spiritual leader, any spiritual being, any spiritual idea or concept. Jesus is better. That's the proclamation of the book of Hebrews. And then, now in chapter 10, the author is bringing us to the point of saying, okay, well, what does it look like to actually live as though you believe that? What does it look like to live with Jesus as best in your life? And so he says, hold fast to this. Don't waver from this confession. God promised that he's going to accomplish certain things through Jesus, and he will, in fact, do that. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some. The concept is, as God's people, Christians, Christ followers, people that say we believe that Jesus is who he says he is, and he's done what he says he's done, we now want to stir each other up. It's a circular motion, and so it's an interdependency. It's like you do it to me, I do it to you, we do it to each other. We're stirring each other, causing each other to move towards what? Love and good works. Acts of love and good works, seeking the benefit of other people. This is the first thing. He says, okay, if you want to treat basically Jesus as best in your life, here's what you'll do. You will live together in such a way that you cause each other to move towards acts of love and seeking the benefit of other people, and obviously with Jesus in the center. So in other words, acts of love as Jesus acted out love, and seeking the benefit of others as Jesus sought out the benefit of others. And he says, make sure you're together in this setting, but also in life, because if you're not together consistently and frequently, you can't do this. So make sure that you don't get into the habit of getting disconnected from God's people, because this has to be part of the deal. But encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. The day drawing near speaks of this day when Jesus is going to come and actually equalize everything. Economics, race, all everything going to be equalized. And as the author of Hebrews is articulating this idea, he's saying, look, as this day is approaching, we as the body of Christ, Christians, are going to demonstrate practically what that looks like. We're going to paint a picture of what God is going to accomplish through what we do. Now, last week I talked about took a kind of a unique journey through the book of Luke. If you missed last week, please listen to it. We did an intense kind of study through the book of Luke, kind of an overflow of the flow and the uniqueness that Luke has towards the economically challenged, the poor. He also has a unique interest in the poor, in whatever that word means. But Luke does have a unique focus on people that are economically challenged, the poor, the disadvantaged. We looked at that, and today is going to stem off of that. So I want to continue kind of unfolding practicalities from our study last week. And what I want to do is look at the posture that we have as we approach love and good works with people. And I want to talk about that internationally, and I want to talk about that locally. And first, let me start with international. When we think about internationally in the rest of the world, we haven't talked a lot about it in the context of Colossae Tigard here. And the reason why is because we wanted to be really intentional from day one of our church to make sure that we were doing our best at being where we are. It doesn't make any sense to me, right, to say I have a heart for Africa or another country, and then I don't even reach out to my neighbors. We really believe God has us where he has us because he wants to use us where he has us. And if we don't think God wants to use us where he has us, then we need to move. And maybe it's Africa or another country. If that's where your heart is, then go there and be there. But we're here, so we've been trying to develop intentionally a culture that's aware and conscious of what is happening right underneath our noses where we are. Now, that said, we're moving in a lot of directions, and this week and next week, I'm going to be kind of unfolding some more things that we want to be doing locally. But when we think about internationally and even locally, it's always been really in the context of planting churches. I don't really think the world needs more churches per se, but the world does need more of the gospel, and the gospel is demonstrated through local churches, or it ought to be. And so we've talked about planting churches. So we've obviously planted in Portland. This is the church plant. We planted this church a while back. We're essentially starting another church plant in 2 weeks in Hillsboro, and we don't anticipate stopping there. We anticipate planting more and more on the west side of Portland. When we think about internationally, trying to think strategically about that, and what does it look like? And so there's a lot of examples of different ways of going about planting churches, especially overseas somewhere. But we are focused really in on four major cities. These four cities are here. These are essentially melting pot cities, with the exception of one of them, and I'll explain that. Amsterdam, for instance, is a melting pot for Europe. Europe goes to Amsterdam for business, travel. Europe is in its very international city. So if we think about having a role in the context of the world, we want to try to be strategic, and we feel like one of these ways that we're going to do this is planting churches in these metropolis areas, and to do that. So Amsterdam is one. Beijing is a melting pot for Asia. There's certainly other cities that would be somewhat of a melting pot, but internationally speaking, Beijing seems to be far beyond many others. It's highly international. Asia goes to Beijing. The world goes to Beijing. Another melting pot city is Dubai. Dubai is a melting pot for the Middle East, but interestingly, it's 53% Indian. Mumbai is different. Mumbai isn't a melting pot per se. Mumbai sends people to the rest of the world. So it's unique in its setting. A lot of need in Mumbai, extreme wealth and extreme poverty, both extremes. But we are looking at these cities to strategically plant churches. Now, in 2015, we're looking at first Mumbai, and second behind it is Dubai. In fact, April 6th, the day after Easter, I'll be hopping on a plane, and Justin is going to hop on a different plane because we couldn't get the same flight. And we're going to meet in Mumbai. I'm flying through Dubai, and I have a 34-hour layover there, slammed with meetings with people, and then I'm going to get on the plane and get to Mumbai and slam for 3 days and then come back, and I'll do all that in like 6 days or whatever it is, because we want to be intentional about moving out. And we have an organization, particularly in Mumbai, that we are very interested in partnering with to plant a church. And so we're going to be doing that in 2015. We want to extend ourselves, whether we plant the church or we help someone else plant the church or whatever, strategically, internationally, this is what we're thinking about, and we're taking it one step at a time. So please be praying for that, whatever that might mean. And if you know some buddy in Beijing, let me know, or somewhere else. If you know, like, the president of the country, tell me. That would be great. We can talk to him, figure out how to navigate that. But that's what we're looking at internationally, anyways. When we talk about more locally, kind of moving in, we've planted here in Portland. I'm also a part of a very tight-knit group of pastors in the West Coast. And we are pooling our resources relationally and financially. Each of our churches, we give half of 1% to this small network that I'm a part of. And we're helping each other plant churches that would demonstrate who Jesus is and what he's done in the city. And all of this is extended largely not only through what we say, but what we do. And what we not just do as individuals, but what we do as a community together. The gospel is powerful, especially when it's demonstrated by a group of people that believe it and live it. That's a powerful statement. And this is what we're trying to plant, moving people towards each other, towards love and good works. Now, I talked about it last week, but we have to be careful now as we approach this. With anybody in any context, we have to be careful, and we have to realize that we are, in fact, the privileged in our world. This is not to be this is not something we should feel guilty for, or certainly beat ourselves up for, or shy away from acknowledging. It's a reality. We are a part of the privileged in our world. If you make over $34,000 a year, you're in the top 1%. Wealthy people in the entire world. You're privileged. For us, a drought. California has had a horrible drought. But every time you turn on a water faucet, water comes out. And people here are concerned about the drought and, you know, because of the snow melt, but, you know, we may not be able to water our lawns as much next summer. Like, this is our drought. This is not the case in the rest of the world. We are, in fact, part of the privileged, and we cannot forget that. In fact, I would suggest we have to keep it on the forefront of our minds, because if we're not careful, it actually is detrimental to caring and serving other people. So what I want to do is based on our study last week in Luke and this passage in Hebrews 10 this week, I want us to take a look at a couple of things that I feel like we can learn from Jesus. Just a few things that he did, so that as we move outwards more and more and more, and as we stir each other up towards acts of love and good deeds and seeking the benefit of other people, we're conscious about some things. And so I just want to walk through those today very practically. The first thing that I would say that Jesus did is that he gave himself. Certainly in his death, he offered himself. But if you read through the Gospels, you also see that he gave himself relationally. He didn't have a lot of money. He wasn't handing out money all the time. He was giving himself. He made himself available. And part of his culture was like this, unlike ours. See, in his culture, and much like the rest of the world, most of the world today even, in his culture, a relationship without obligation was no relationship. For us, when we talk about relationships, we love relationships that we have to give a minimal amount of ourselves to. we go into a situation, we say, oh, don't worry, there's no strings attached. We go, oh, okay, we're good with that. In Jesus' culture in ancient Israel and most of the world today even, it's different. They would always never see themselves as an individual. In a relationship, you were obligated to one another to seek each other's benefit. When you read through the scriptures, you see that Jesus, when people spoke of themselves or certainly even of another person and even of Jesus, they were always connected to someone else. Why? Or something else. Why? Because they didn't see themselves the way we do, as individuals. It was always Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus, the Son of God. God, the Father. God, Creator. You were always connected to something or someone else. Why? Because they didn't see themselves as individuals. They saw themselves as a greater whole. And this played out in relationship. So you didn't go into relationship for what you could get. You went into relationship for mutual benefit. And so when Jesus gives himself, he gives himself relationally. Now, it's not totally wrong or bad to have such an individualistic mindset like we do, but there are dangers. And the dangers consist of, I serve you for what I get. And that can become detrimental. You see, in Jesus, he absolutely demands that we give self, not just finances. And in an individualistic society, as ingrained as it is in you and me, we have to be conscious of this. Because we like to have minimal actual personal investment. We'll give money to a need, but then we're afraid that we're going to be taken advantage of. In Jesus, we're demanded, commanded to give self. Even today in other countries, outside of Western culture, for instance, Africa or China. If you ever interact with somebody in Africa, you will often be asked for things. Why? And we view that as like you're manipulative or you're off or you're trying to use me and abuse me, and we get concerned about being taken advantage of. But we also have to, and that may be true, and there may be some wisdom and some balances, but the reality is their culture is different. There is no relationship without obligation in their world. So although we might feel like we're being taken advantage of, it's totally normal for an African to know that if you're even a friend on Facebook, there's a mutual obligation. It's unspoken. You help me, I help you. If you read in business journals regarding China today or whatever, China specifically, they have this kind of unspoken kind of ethic of, it's called Wangxi, and it's this unspoken expectation in relationship. It's an obligation to each other that you seek the benefit of the other person. And the expectation is that if we're in relationship, you are going to benefit me and I am going to benefit you. This is why you can be invited to dinner in China, have dinner, hang out, and at the end they ask you how you're going to help them get their kid into college in the United States. And you kind of go, wait, what? I didn't realize this was a bait and switch deal. Like, I didn't know what's going on. But from there, that's our individual. You have to understand, this is cultural. It's not right or wrong. It's cultural. Our idea of relationship is based around me. And I don't like to give myself very much. In other cultures and in Jesus' teachings, you give self. Relationship without obligation is no relationship. So Jesus demands us to give of ourselves. And if we think back to our Hebrews chapter 10 study here of stirring each other up towards acts of love and good works, we came up with this statement that community is not an end for ourselves, but instead a means for others. We have no other conclusion we can come to when you look at the teachings and the life and of Jesus. And Hebrews is the same. We exist for the world, for the name of Jesus. We exist for other people. We don't consume community. We are a community for the benefit of other people. This is the church. And we have to understand this, and it requires the giving of ourself. Following Jesus demands that. The second thing that I want to talk about Jesus doing is this, is that he viewed generosity as a means of service, not power. I want to share some things from my own life here as examples of this, but Jesus always, when he served people, I think when you read the scriptures, you see that he brings value to people. You actually see him putting himself underneath, like even washing of feet is a good example. He puts himself underneath people. He puts their needs ahead of his and their desires and their person ahead of his. He values the humanity in people. And so his generosity of self was really a service to a human being. I haven't always done that, I have to confess. It slips out in a number of different ways, but I've been to 26 countries, for instance. And I think of one point where I was in a taxi. It was either in Thailand or in Bangkok or in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. I actually get it confused. It's 10 years ago. But I think it was Cambodia. But I was with a student named Dane, and we were driving with our guide, and we got done with the taxi ride, and Dane says, "I like to pay," and I was like, "Okay." So he pays the fare, and then he gives the driver a tip, which is totally something we do in our culture, and he did it out of the gratefulness of his heart. And so he tips him, and then we get out, and our guide, who understands American culture very well, and because he gives us guide, you know, tours all the time, and he's actually a believer too. He asked Dane, he says, "Hey, why did you give him more money?" And Dane was like, "I don't know, I just thought it would be nice. I mean, we give him a tip, and man, I probably like gave him like double his daily wage or something." And the guide says, "Yeah, exactly, but you dishonored him." And I was like, "Yeah, why are you dishonoring him? Like, that was rude, you know? That was dumb." But he began to explain that this man is not driven by wealth the way we are. That he had honor as a man who was working hard. He found great value and honor in that alone, regardless of how much money it was. And his value and honor came from providing a service. And as we talked, and the guide was pretty gracious, but he told me, he says, "You know, Chuck, the problem with you Americans is you actually think you're better than other people because you have more than they do." And I was like, "Wow, like it was just like $2.50, man." It's like, you know. But as I've unpacked that and kind of like thought through that over the last 10 or so years, I realize that I had, you know, unintentionally, but I had put myself in a power-oriented position over this man. I did. I actually kind of felt sorry for him. Why? Because he didn't have what I had. How crazy is that? Jesus somehow balances this with humility that I clearly have not modeled in many ways. This humility when serving people, that he brings value and honor to people. And if we're not careful, our prestigious mindset, whether we realize it or not, can be a detriment. And we want to be very, very careful with that, especially when we reach out and care for people that are less fortunate or less privileged or even disadvantaged or oppressed than we are. We want to be really, really careful of this. When Jesus met needs, it was a means to meet the person. That's different. Like you and I, we can see needs and then we say, "Oh, you know, I should probably give to that. You know, I need to do that." And that's great. That's good. But for Jesus, it was a means of meeting the person. His humanity engaged with the humanity of another person. This is what we're talking about. We believe this type of mentality, this type of posture, actually demonstrates who Jesus is and what he's done, and therefore proclaims the gospel in ways that our mouths can never do by itself. It has to be both. That leads me to the last thing I'll share is this, is that when Jesus, he saw people, not just needs. This is hard for me because I've been to a lot of developing countries. And you see kids eating, you know, scrounging in the dump to going to an AIDS hospital where they're basically just left to die because the country can't care for them, and they're holding their baby, and the mom is handing over babies to every female to please breastfeed my baby because I'm not producing milk, and then the baby's going to die. I just go on and on and on about the scenarios and situations that I've been in. But if I'm really honest, especially early on in my travels, the reality is I viewed people as like some sort of tourist exhibit of poverty. And I say that because as I look back, it shows in how many pictures I took, how often I was grabbing my camera to take pictures of things, how often I posted the pictures. It was like I'm on this like poverty tourism event. And I would have never been able to articulate that, but when I think back on it, I just think, wow, how was I perceived? Was I really bringing value to the people in need that I was taking pictures of? Or was I more concerned about me doing something? Now here's what I would say to you. This is clearly not the worst thing I've ever done in my life. Okay? And there's a beauty. Like, we ought to feel good about meeting the needs of other people. We ought to feel good about doing things on behalf of other people. But we just want to make sure that we don't miss the being of a person that we're supposed to be doing something for. We got to be very careful of our posture and demeanor in all of this. Now, as we go about serving people more and more and more and embedding ourselves more here where we are in Hillsboro, Beaverton, and the rest of the world, I want to end my time or our discussion here today with sharing some numbers with you. And I want to share these numbers with you just as a means of communicating a certain specific kind of need. And I just ask you that when you see these numbers, you view them as people and not stats. It's really important that we understand this. Because next week, I want to kind of talk about something that we as a community together, again, because I believe the gospel is very powerful when it's communicated by a community of people that live it and believe it. And how do we do this together? And so we'll talk more practically about that next week. But let me just show you these numbers. Last year, school year, there was 132 students in our Tiger Tualatin School District that were homeless in 14 schools. 354 in Hillsboro, and then 1,331 in the Beaverton School District. Now, to be clear with this, these are not just random people on the streets. These are families that are in crisis. Families that have kids that go to school with your kids or next to your house or apartment or condo. These are families that are, last week I introduced Allie to you and explained to you our strategy and kind of our heart for her and her role at the Family Resource Center and the things that she's exposed to with kids getting taken away from their families just because they're getting sick because they can't shower. These are families that are at a critical fork in the road, and there's a need. This year, we started to really look into this in October of this year, and me and some of the staff, Allie and Justin and Dave Crosswhite, a guy in our church, really started to dive into this. What does this actually look like? Because when we talk to the school district and we talk to the police department, the number one issue that they ask for help for is homeless youth. We've heard it for 6 years. It's a need right underneath our noses. here in October, as of October, we had some dates, and obviously these numbers have gone higher. But on October 13th, we already had 64 students homeless in Tiger Tualatin School District, 163 in Hillsborough, and I wasn't able to get the Beaverton numbers for today, but it's higher. And that's as of October 13th. And so here's the thing. We have people here that are in need, and right underneath our noses. In fact, some of you in the room might be in need, and you yourself might need help, and we want to help you. But these are real people. Even just this fall, we were helping as a church, helping this family that was homeless. They had three, maybe four kids. And I ended up being a part of that, and I brought Karis and Hope with me, my two oldest daughters. And one of their kids actually was a classmate with Karis. And that's happened over and over and over. Even recently, I think that's happened in our church. And I can tell you story after story after story of communities of people that are helping people in need and individuals that are helping people in need in our church, that you in the room. But collectively, I think we could do more. And there's a real need that the school district and the police department are telling us about. And so next week, I want to talk to you about very practically, what does this look like? What roles can we all play in this? And then we're going to actually have a Q&A where Allie and Dave Crosswhite are going to join me, and we're going to have a discussion in here about what does this look like to help in this area in community. Now, here's the deal. We're not about this cause. His name is Jesus. All we're talking about is that this is a way that we can continue to, as a community, demonstrate who we believe Jesus is and what he's done. And we'll continue doing everything else we're doing. We want to encourage you. And not everybody should be a part of this, but we're going to talk about it next week. But we all do need to think through, please think through last week's message and then our posture. And as Jesus' followers, are we actually doing what he did? Or are we just wearing bracelets and figuring out what would he do? We got to think through what did he do and go from there. So here, we're going to take communion. This is gluten-free, so if you're new with us and that's an issue for you, you can participate with us. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the bread, dip in the juice. You can get up when you feel like it's appropriate for you. And we're going to remember what the fact that Jesus gave himself. But here's what I would also ask you to think through when you take this bread and you remember how Jesus gave himself. Take this consciously as a follower of Jesus, who we also are called to give of ourselves. Finances are a part of that, but yourself as well. So as you take this, would you remember that? If this is your church, we pool our money together here. So if this is your church, you can give in the boxes there. And let me pray, and then Austin and Kaylee will lead us in time of worship too.